Hi everyone, this is Matt Price, one of the hosts for the longest-running Dynasty-focused podcast on the planet, the DLF Dynasty Podcast. Each week, we'll bring you an episode packed with relevant and actionable Dynasty information that you can use to help win your league. When I'm in the host chair, we might even play a game or two. We are always open to topic suggestions, so if there's something you'd like to hear us discuss, please let us know. Thanks for listening.
Hello and welcome back to the Dynasty Crossroads. My name is Peter Howard, at PA Howdy on Twitter. This is a member of the DLF family of podcasts. Welcome back. This week I've got an episode that I recorded a while ago, so we didn't get to talk about the most recent NFL moves with Brandon Cooks and some other things. But it was with Christopher Bean. Really enjoyed talking to him. We had an interesting conversation. Talked about some rookie prospects that he hadn't really thought of before, but so it was interesting to see what he thought of them fresh, kind of. And also just the nature of this 2020 draft class and what it might tell us about the decisions we have to make in a rookie draft before we see landing spot. Really hope you enjoyed it. I hope you've been able to check out the live stream on Twitch or on YouTube of our 100th episode live event. I haven't been able to cut it down enough into enough sections that our podcasting hosts will actually accept it as an episode yet. It's 3 hours long and you just can't upload a 3 hour long podcast apparently, or I can't, with our hosting service. So for now it's only really available on YouTube and on Twitch. But check it out. I think we had a great time. We talked about a lot of interesting things. If there's anything you want me to cover before the NFL draft gets here, please hit me up at PA Howdy or at Dino Crossroads, though I don't think I've ever signed into that account, so I've got no idea what's going over there. So at PA Howdy is probably your best bet right now. Hope you enjoy this conversation with Chris. Hope to hear from you soon as well. Hope you're happy, healthy, safe, and with really clean hands. And I will talk to you again next week. What do we disagree on, man? There's got to be something.
I don't know, man. It's shit. We'll actually, we'll find something here. I was gonna ask you, what are we gonna talk about anyway?
I don't care. I'm just happy to talk to you. But yeah, in terms of getting a podcast out of it, like I want to concentrate on something we try and find something we disagree with. Unless you've got like the question I've been asking everyone is, who's your favorite rookie? And we'll talk about them. So at least we'll probably get 20 minutes of content, you know. But So if you have a favorite rookie, then we'll get it out there. But even rookie takes right now feel a little overdone. Doesn't it feel like, and especially where it's going to be prolonged, like this is a period where everyone just starts making shit up because they need to think more shit and the season isn't here yet.
Yeah. And I'm also hurting on my rookie stuff. Like I can look up anybody that I need to talk about when I'm talking about him. But as far as full-blown rookie analysis, I still haven't finished switching to your database yet. So I actually haven't run any comps. I'm like so far behind on that stuff right now. I basically started and went, all right, I'm going to finish this later and then haven't gotten to it yet.
But it can be anything. It can be something from the NFL. I mean, I don't really want to talk about if the season doesn't happen, one, because it's depressing, and two, because
forget that.
I think everyone's going to know what we should have done after the fact and pretend like they knew now, but they don't. Like, you can come up with a million different, like, sellable running backs under the age of 24. Really, though? I mean, what if we come back and all those young running backs have skipped over the years where they could prove themselves? And now those two more classes behind them, willing, ready to push them out of the way, Darrell Henderson might never see the fucking field again. It might be, you know, Edne from next year's class that gets the job he would have had a run at for a year, you know? So, I don't think that makes sense.
That's a good one there, because I really just don't even see. I really still don't understand why Darrell Henderson's going to be the guy.
Yeah, I don't think he is anyway, but at least he'll get value bumps and he'll have more of a shot at it. And you know, maybe if the season was canceled, he still would. But I think his chances of it, well, it's like they, well, you know, you went to college and they always pointed out to me, like,
next year there'll be another class of students fresh out of school. So, like, don't wait, because the longer you wait to apply for jobs or you know, move forward in whatever you want to move forward in, the more people there are behind you who have just graduated. They're younger, they're more impressionable. And despite the fact everyone wants experience these days on a resume, they also like not being able to pay you as much. And the older you get, the more you can want to be paid, you know? So, like, you're always being chased out. And so I was trying to apply that logic to running to NFL players. And it's not necessarily positive for the young guys. Like, I think everyone goes to sell the old guys. But I'm like, yeah, but Julio, even if he's diminished, we don't know if he is in 2 years.
Yeah.
I don't think he would be. But even if he was, he's still fucking Julio. His job's safe.
Yeah.
Darrell Henderson, Cortland Sutton, 3-4 years out at that point with one good season and two new rookie classes now competing on depth charts. Like, do I think he's as safe? I don't know. Here's my point. And so I think we know less about what we would do if the season was canceled than we maybe think we do.
Oh, yeah. Oh my God. Can you imagine if there was a canceled season? I mean, you imagine college football won't be going either, and they're not going to let these guys go back to school. How much of this rookie class is just going to get ridiculously out of shape and out of football shape,
right?
And just not be good anymore. This could go from a historically great class to just a horrific class in a year. I mean, just because we had to wait a year with no football.
There you go. That's something we don't. I don't think this is a historically great class.
Well, I think it is in part in places.
Don't back away now. Yeah. Don't back. God, I'm squinting like I'm staring at the sun. Sorry, I've got my light off because I'm tired of looking at people like this. I could turn it on for videos so people can actually see me, and not the dankness of my basement dwelling room. But like, it's really hard to stare at. It's just because I'm recently woken up. People think I don't sleep. I just sleep at weird times.
Yeah, I don't actually have a webcam right now. It's probably a good thing because I need to clean this place up. But
no, man, I'm looking forward to seeing you. Like, it's nice to connect to a person, a physical, like I'm visual, to the guy I've been arguing with online for like 5 years now, 3 years.
Oh my God.
No, we do largely agree, and it's a problem. But
we could easily go over the free agent class. I mean, that was free agent signings are always fun, right?
Yeah, I don't know, them as well. But yeah, if you wanted to, I'd talk about it. I will gladly, as you know, share an opinion on absolutely anything, whether I know it or not. But yeah, I really don't think this is a historical class. I think everyone's been expecting 2014. For 2020, since 2018, I don't think it's here. I think I see an awful lot of flaw. And to be fair, like, I don't know how you feel about your comp sheet. Maybe we should start there. Like, we prospect a little differently. You're a little more dedicated to the data than I am. I like to step away from it at a certain point and try and make a narrative, frankly.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas you are. Bloodthirsty about your comp sheet. You will accept no arguments that Henry Ruggs is good, right?
And that's actually not even so much the comp sheet, so much as just historical success rates. It's just really bad when you don't ever break out. It's literally like I go through player profilers database, and I know it's not gonna quite match yours. But I think it's pretty close to the same number for you. But it's like it's a 2% success rate, and for non-breakout wide receivers, and that's staggering. And then the fact that none of them were drafted is even more mind-boggling. So obviously, high draft capital helps them. I mean, we just because there hasn't been success when there's only been four top three round picks in that database with without a breakout age doesn't mean that it's not a good thing to be a high draft pick. But even if you adjust that, what are you adjusting it to? 8%? 10%? You're not going to bring that up to 50-50 coin flip. I mean, he's a really bad shot. It's just, and yeah, maybe he's an outlier, but I wouldn't put money on it. I mean, even if you like Ruggs, you really gotta like Ruggs, or there isn't. It's just not a safe bet.
They get drafted though.
Yeah, I mean, he'll definitely get drafted. I got a bet out there with someone. I already forget who, that he does not get drafted in the first, though. He just doesn't. He doesn't look like a first round pick. Not when you put him on paper.
I'm willing to believe that he'll get drafted in the first round. That's weird. And no, what I meant is like players that didn't break out. You said they don't get drafted. They get drafted. Mecole Hardman never broke out. Terry McLaurin never broke out. I've got a list here. Ray McLeod from 2018. Everyone remembers him.
Well, it's not that they don't get drafted. Damian Ratley. None of them that succeeded got drafted. Let me rephrase that. Tyreek Hill. As far as a top 24 season, Tyreek Hill does not count. He broke out. He just broke out a different position.
Yeah. The ones that break out or have good seasons in the NFL are usually Tyreek Hill's. Like, he didn't play. Play enough in college. Cecil Short, though, apparently. I don't have... Oh, no, I just don't have data on him. Julian Edelman. But he played quarterback. Yeah, that's the thing. excuse me.
Yeah.
I looked at players that were wide receiver threes in their last year. And by that, I simply mean he got the third most yards on his team, okay? Because, you know, what is a wide receiver? That term seems to trigger people. Like, he's not a wide receiver three. No, he was literally a wide receiver three on his team, if you use that definition. And the third most yards on his team in his last year, and every year, but the only guy I can find that had a fantasy relevance as a wide receiver three on his team, or later, like 3, 4, 5, 6, whichever way they ranked on their team, and then had fantasy significance in from the last year in college, who was it? Eddie Royal. That's no one's idea of an upside comp.
I mean, Adam Humphries has to hit that mark too, right? I would assume. Actually, I think he was fourth on his team. But Adam Humphries probably hits that mark too. Out of curiosity, when you did your teammate score, how high did he?
Yeah, it's wide receiver four. It's a good question. You know, Clemson in those years is one of the examples. I did go through it. Let's see. His teammate score was 2.8. So in his last year, his teammates were creating the top three players on the team, which was not Humphries, and with 2.8 over the conference average. I've really got to work on that, but I hate modifying metrics the same year that I make them. You know what I mean?
Yeah, you kind of want to test them out for a bit first.
Yeah, let them sit a while. Otherwise, you're just constantly editing shit. Because I was trying to find a way of removing the player themselves, but then you've got an Adam Humphries that isn't even included in that top. It's a tricky little formula to write in some ways. So instead, it's just the average of the top three above conference average. And he's around 2.8. Like, let's see.
I ran in the same thing when I was doing my version, by the way. I had a couple of guys that I was subtracting a number out for when they weren't included in the number because they were too far down the depth chart.
Yeah, but that's exactly what you mean. You've got like DJ Moore, for example. He's got one of the higher teammate scores that isn't just getting fucked by conference level, frankly. But it's all him. Like, the wide receiver two wasn't doing nothing. It just happens that he has a 53 dominator in his last year. And, like, yeah, he alone was beating the conference average by about 9%. And Demaryius Thomas, same story. And Tyler Johnson and Rashad Bateman are right up there. But that makes sense because they were both on the same depth chart and exceeding conference averages by a great deal. And so them being up there, 8.9% is one of the highest scores I've got. And that makes sense because they were both doing it. They were wide receiver one and two the last 2 years. So in their last year, 2019, yeah, they were incredibly high. The one that I trust more reasonably because it's not so exorbitant is like Odo Beckham and Jarvis Landry. That's like 5% above average. And that seems to be, and that since that's the one instance I know where two high caliber NFL players were playing on the same depth chart in the same year in their last season. 5% seems like really significant.
Yeah.
But yeah, then you get to Corey Davis again, and that's all him. That's not the rest of his team. Courtland Sutton, same thing. Which is so I don't have a way of separating out which of these is Corey Davis and which of these and DJ Moore and which of these is the Tyler Johnson. What do you think of Tyler Johnson by now?
I really just want to know where he's going to get drafted. It seems like the tape community is a heck of a lot lower than the analytics community on him. And, you know, we're a lot more blind than they are without having draft capital. So he looks like an outstanding prospect. I just have absolutely no idea. I mean, there's going to be such a difference between if he goes in the second round or if he goes in the fourth round. But his prospect profile is through the roof. If he's a second round pick, my comm sheet's gonna put him against some of the best ever. So,
yeah, that's kind of where like no one knows. No one knows apart from NFL front offices apparently, who all know something. And that Tyler Johnson's got something there that we don't know about. But that brings me back a little bit to Ruggs, like. As dedicated as you are to data, you kind of just have to believe something at a certain point, right?
Yeah.
Like, there has to be something. I do think there has to be something. Maybe they're just wrong, but there's a reason to like Henry Ruggs. Good old Harriet Ruggs. And that's kind of where I step away from it. When the conversation doesn't meet what we think of them or what typically works, like people, things that look weird, the NFL doesn't like weird, but if it looks weird to fantasy, but it makes sense to the NFL, I start to look suspicious at it. Mostly I'm going to fade it because I want to beat the NFL draft. Otherwise there's really no point in playing.
Yeah. But when there's that big of a disparity, you try to shift your thinking a little bit.
Yeah. At least look for it. Right.
Well, my comp sheet, actually, last year's comp sheet, I put Henry Ruggs into it, and while it's far from good, it's
better.
It's exceptionally better than the odds I'm giving them. And I often say it's smarter than I am, and I think some of that lies to what you're talking about. You know, you say I'm so focused on the data. I put a pretty broad leeway room in the comps when I do it so that it filters down and can catch some of that. And I think it might actually be seeing some of that there. Because on the high end, he's in the, on the DR, one standard deviation up is in the 20s, in the mid 20s. So it's catching guys that have had NFL success that look like him in all the other ways too. And I'm trying to find right now some of the names. Let's see, Christopher Bean. Oh, Ruggs. Let's see, I mean, it actually pulled Santana Moss for one. Mike Wallace. We got Travis Benjamin in here. Of course, it pulled Mecole Hardman. I mean, it had to pull him. Not to use a success yet, but a lot of people are projecting him to be a high-level wide receiver.
Definitely not had success yet.
Yeah. Darius Slayton's on here. So, I mean, the high end on this list is actually not bad. I just look at him more like Colby Listenby than I do than I do those guys. He's just his profile is just that low. Maybe Travis Benjamin's actually not an awful comp for him, I don't think. But there is leeway there, and it does say on the high end he has a shot at success in the NFL, which the statistical odds historically say otherwise. But
yeah, I don't want to get lost in the Herbert Ruggs weeds too much. It's just a place to maybe argue. What do you think of? And like I say, I'll talk about anyone. I'm just kind of throwing out names, see what happens. KJ Hamler, he's someone I don't get a lot of content on, but I really want other opinions because I'm starting to like him a lot.
Yeah, wow. Yeah, I actually. Why have I not been watching this guy more? You're about to give. You're trying to give BMI Twitter a heart attack though. Going like Hamler
this year, man. This is a very light wide receiver class. That's for almost the best way to describe them. They're all tiny.
I think that's sort of a trend. I've talked before on Twitter about the fact that we see a progression in the NFL, and we've seen it flip, I think, twice already, where wide receivers get bigger as corners get smaller and faster. And then corners switch and start getting bigger again, keep up with these big bodies, and wide receivers transition smaller again against it. After the Seahawks' big run, the league started transitioning to large corners again, big-bodied corners. And so now we're getting a lot of smaller wide receivers who those guys can't necessarily keep up with, aren't necessarily as agile as, aren't necessarily as fast as. And I know height and long speed often correlate, but that's distance running. There isn't a ton of that on the football field. And you do see that transition. If you go look at league average size for the two positions over the last 100 years, you can see it flip like twice already in the past. I'm trying to remember who I saw that from. I want to say it was a Football Guys article, but I can't swear to that. And then I started looking at it myself afterwards. But I really like KJ Hamler. Just looking at his profile, his college dominator isn't exceptional, but it's at a super young age. It's well above the age adjusted marks I want for him. I like the fact he did a lot of returning. That's actually something that matters at the NFL level. Guys that returned a lot in the NFL tend to succeed more often. Haven't found a way to incorporate that into my metrics yet, but it's something I glance at when I look at their college profile. He's someone I'm going to be keeping an eye on now. I wish I had been paying attention earlier.
Yeah, sorry. What was that?
Which part?
All of it? I stepped away to go deal with my dogs again, so honestly, missed it.
Okay.
It sounds like you liked him, though, and
yeah.
You recorded it, so I'll hear it later. So, what did the comp sheet what did it spit out? Does it have a comp for Hamler?
Oh, it would take me about 10 minutes to throw him in the comp sheet, so I didn't do that.
Okay.
I just went over his individual parts. I mean, he didn't have an exceptional DR, but it was at such a young age that it is exceptional.
That's what I was going to say. It's age adjusted that makes these guys trigger my model. So, all right. I can guess some of the things he said, I guess. He only played those 2 years, but those 2 years he played at a really important age between 19 and 20. He was above average. Well, he was definitely above average at 19 for his age. He was right on the average at 20, which is really good. Like being at the average, for example, is good NFL players, which is a really high mark to hit in college because most good NFL players are exceptionally good in college. The average is a little fairer because it pulls in those who didn't do too well at those ages as well. Like I say, it's been fairly successful for me. So he's got a really good production score based on his age. And his size doesn't scare me because we always go to the same place with size. You know, like you were saying, it goes up and down over the generations. It's interesting to hear you describe it that way. Like, I'm always, against believing in a recent trend, like Odell Beckham is small, so now wide receivers are small. But like when I dig back through the history, I can't really find a time where they were all big. But it is interesting to hear you talk about how the cornerback and wide receiver matchups go up and down. That's like, I think it's going to switch before we see that it might switch. So it's a little tenuous to believe in, but I do think players could be good at all different sizes, right? They could just, I don't think the size makes them good or bad.
It's no, just the way they play at that size. It's a trend, but it's definitely, I mean, and like you said, it's really actually hard to perceive just watching the game because the field is what averages. You still have players on both sides of the spectrum that come and succeed because good football players are going to succeed. But you do see that overall trend exists if you look at the long data on the average. At least, that's what I recall from when I looked at it 2 years ago. But, so I'd have to pull it up again to swear by it. But yes, if I recall correctly, they swapped the blue twice already, and you can see the size change, over a long period of time. It's just, you're definitely not going to see it year to year. It's just, it's too small of a change.
Right. No, I agree with that. And I agree with trying to know it, even if you're not going to adjust for it. You just try and know it. Because it's, like I say, I think it's going to shift too quick. But, all right, so here's my, like, this is a guy. Oh my God, I said it. I said this is a guy. KJ Hamler is a person I definitely think should have spiked up in at least the commentary around this class more. And that goes a little bit to the dearth. I'm not going to say depth, because everyone says depth. The girth or the dearth of this class. There's a lot of mid-range potential in here, which could have higher or lower ceilings. Like I said, my personal research has yielded that production is rarely... It's fairly limited in terms of its ability to project ceiling, but it can project likelihood of success. So I think Hamler is someone that really should be popping. Now, having said that, like, this is a really good profile. You should check him out if you haven't. The thing that I noted about Hamler is while my average adjusts for good NFL players, all those good NFL players came from different conferences. And while I largely actively scoff at people who worry about competition level. And one thing I do note is that the Big Ten, the wide receiver one in the Big Ten, and Hamler was a wide receiver one for his team. The average for that conference, and the conference is different to the top to the bottom of the conference, obviously, but is actually around 27%, which is a clear 1-2% higher than all but the Big 12 in the Power 5 conferences. And so what I'm essentially saying is they do tend to average a little more market share. Now, a potential saving grace is that Hamler is at 27% at 19, which again was above average for his age. He was right at conference level for a wide receiver one. And at 20, he was at 31% in terms of receiving yards. And so he beat the conference average significantly there as well. But I don't have a great way of merging those two ways of looking at his production yet, if you know what I mean. He's very productive based on his age. He's productive based on his conference level as well. But I don't know how, if sometimes when you merge those things, they actually come out below looking less good. But Hamler's definitely someone we should be hearing more about. And I don't hear anything about him. Like,
which is worrisome.
Addison Hayes really likes him, but he's a Penn State fan. So literally. But he was really efficient. Yards per team pass attempt was at 1.7 yards per team pass attempt, and then 2.0, which is really significant when you look at historical comparisons as well. Actually, is at 2.1 and 2.5 yards per team pass attempt, but he was at 1.7 and 2 above team average, which is even more significant. He was significantly more efficient per team touch than anyone else on his team. That 2 mark in that above team average in yards per team pass attempt, I've got to come up with a name for that, by the way. It's like, it shouldn't take you a week to explain what statistic you're talking about. Right. But It's actually really significant when you look at like players with top 24 seasons, like even like the Robert Woodses of the world.
I was going to ask you because that's a new one that's blowing up right now. Like a lot of guys that we interact with are starting to use that, and I haven't played with it yet. I don't know if it was you or one of the other guys that actually came up with it, but
no, it wasn't me.
It wasn't you?
No, Anthony Amico is the first one I think I heard talking about it. JJ Zacharyson's a big proponent as well. Yeah. As a stat, it's more predictive without doing anything to it than market share. I think I can get market share as predictive, but you have to work on it. If you just want to look at a singular stat to explain who they were in college, yards per team pass attempt is better, definitely. And that probably means if we work on it, we can make it a little better than market share, but right now we're not there, I don't think.
Okay. Huh. Yeah, I've been seeing it blow up, and I haven't had a chance to work with it yet. I just saw that a lot of people seem to be liking it. But well, I've also seen that before. It's funny because I made the comp sheets kind of just to see what, I mean, just like, you know, similar players. I didn't think it was going to be much of anything for me when I did it. I'm like, man, like 3/4 of these stats aren't even predictive. They're just descriptive. Like wide receivers have literally 2 stats. 2 of the 5 filters are predictive. You know, these are just descriptive. Like, this is going to be garbage. And I kept doing it and realizing what it was doing is it was generating player buckets. And it was doing a much better job than I was just looking at a player. And not every time, but usually. I mean, it basically generates a bucket that the player fits in. And that bucket has its own success rate. Once I started realizing that, yeah, it became kind of my holy grail. It's far from perfect, but it really works best on wide receivers right now. The other comp sheets are kind of a joke, to be honest. But wide receivers, it does an outstanding job with. I'm working on fine tuning it so I can show exactly how good a job it does. Like, I'm trying to do tightness of cohort so that it shows how close the comps are to the original player and then the success rate of that cohort and points per game average. One of the main.
So something I do want to talk about from this year's class, maybe this is a thing we'll have an episode on. And I'm going to keep you here, by the way. This is a thing I have to look forward to today. So, dial in. This draft class, and especially looking at the success rates of our ability to predict who's the best player, is there a reason to take a wide receiver in the first round for Dynasty?
Probably not. I mean, there's just enough guys, and I don't think that. I think there's enough in the same talent pool that it should push the position down further. I thought it was ridiculous when they were talking about how many wide receivers are going to go early. I think I mentioned to someone that the, what was it, like 20 or something, someone was predicting. And I was talking about the economics of that. And like basically, you'd have to have the greatest draft class ever. So yeah, I don't think that in this class, you should necessarily get wide receiver in the first round. I think teams don't care and will anyway. I think draft capital, if we're thinking from an economics viewpoint, it should be lower.
No, I didn't mean for the NFL, although that's a really interesting opinion. I mean us in our rookie draft. I don't know if we should draft wide receivers. Here's what's been going around in my head. It's actually important for you to decide if you think this is 2014 or not. Like, we joke around with it, no class is 2014, but if that's a potential for you, if you love this class that much still, you go wide receiver, and you go wide receiver heavy. Because if this is a wide receiver class, that's when you do it. Dynasty, you know, just basic theory, if this is a year where all the upside, the players are wide receiver, you don't want to quibble over positional value and hit rates. You just want to go for those wide receivers. Now, the important note on that is the wide receivers, not ADP. Because historically, the wide receiver one, ADP wise, sucks. But there are good wide receivers in every class. The problem is we get about three on average for a class, and that includes 2010 and 2014, where there were seven. They get a top 24 season, so that average is actually a little lower on a per draft basis. And if you take out like the spike years, but we shouldn't do that for me. Dynasty theory wise, you should almost always lean running back early in the first round because we get wide receivers at the top wrong so often. And however, I think most of us that like Dynasty and like wide receivers or drafting wide receivers early, I think we have a contrary nature. And if that's the case, then it's okay to go wide receiver because you don't take the consensus ADP. You take T.Y. Hilton and Stephon Diggs before anyone else thinks you should. But that also means you're giving up value, Dynasty theory, which means you should probably trade back to get those players. So that's just the overview of what I'm talking about here, that running back is like an insanely higher hit rate per ADP compared to wide receiver.
Yeah.
But we should be free, therefore, to take your shots at wide receiver a lot more than at running back. You should believe ADP at running back a lot more than wide receiver. Now, take that a step further into this year's class. If this is a 2014-2010 occurrence, where the wide receivers in the class are what you want, the running backs are going to be kind of meh, which is still good for positional value, because running backs in the top 24 are valuable, but like, we'll get the running backs in this class a lot more right year one and year two than we will the wide receivers. That's true. That's going to be true. If you think we have a shot at getting these wide receivers right, it's nothing compared to our running back accuracy since 2013, since we've been tracking DLF ADP. So when I look at this class, I don't think I see, but I could be wrong, because predicting upside, again, is where the production is weakest. Likelihood of success, there's a lot of dearth of it. I don't see a lot of upside, but it's also weak at doing that. But the players in round two range, Denzel Mims, Jalen Reagor, KJ Hamler, who we talked about, I could arguably see a top 12 upside from them. So I prefer the wide receivers in the round two range and running backs in round one. And that's why it's actually important to me whether anyone sees 2014 in this class, because I don't think...
I almost want to segue, just because I had an interesting topic, but I want to stick to this first here. I think, first of all, that 2014 looked like we had some seriously exceptional talent at the top. But like you said, we're really not actually good at forecasting that. We ended up being right about that class to some extent, but... we're really bad at forecasting ceilings. This class looks very, very, as a lot of very strong players, even if none of them quite show that same league breaking look on the surface. So like you said, a lot of floor guys. You're actually making me reconsider my draft strategy for this year right now, talking about that. Because I do think that a lot of the guys that will go round one are guys that I'm not going to like anyway. So why am I not waiting until round two and drafting the guys I'm going to like? Like Judy, I'm never going to take Judy before someone else in my league will. It's just not going to happen. I don't hate Judy. It's just like last year with Metcalf. I didn't hate Metcalf. Like, I didn't dislike him like most of the data colleagues did, because I'm not age-adjusting, or I'm not game-adjusting, or I am game-adjusting, sorry. But I also was never going to get a shot at him because film guys are going to love him too much. and that's going to be Judy for me. I'm just not going to like him enough to grab him ever. And the second-round guys look great. So, yeah, I think I'd probably wait, even if I thought there was, even if I think this class is going to give us a couple top level wide receivers. I have no idea who the heck it's going to be out of these 10 guys that we're going to have that all look good. So yeah, I'd rather take my shots there and focus on the more predictable running backs. and it'll be interesting to see. I definitely think it's got a shot at being one of the great classes, just because we have such a large pool to draw from for potential elites. we have such a large good caliber player pool.
Who do you want to talk about, man? What do you want to talk about?
I asked about the XFL because of PJ Walker, the quarterback.
No idea.
So he's a quarterback, absolutely lit up the XFL. Now he was I think he was only a practice squad guy before in the NFL, but young guy. Come on, PJ Walker, PFR, Philip Walker. Yeah, he 2017 Colts basically moved him around from practice squad to cut all the way to the XFL. So we never saw the field, but in the XFL he lit the world on fire. Looked like the greatest thing ever. Like, and just absolute stud quarterback play on every game that they had. And the Panthers signed him.
I was going to say, is that the guy that just got signed? I saw someone got signed from the XFL.
And it's interesting because I honestly would tell you right now, I think the guy's far better than Kyle Allen is. So if Teddy reverts, gets injured, struggles, suddenly this guy could just come out of nowhere. And he might actually be good. It's really hard to say with that level of competition in the XFL, but I mean, he was by far the best quarterback in the XFL. It wasn't even close. And there are former NFL quarterbacks in the XFL. So it was interesting to see that. But I'm really curious what happens there in Carolina with him. I mean, if he's good, he might show up. And we could see him on the field sooner or later with Teddy's history.
It's going to happen at some point. I don't know if this is a guy. I don't know anything about him. But, like, it's basically, it could end up being like a minor league for the NFL, right? That's part of the idea. Part of the idea of what could happen.
That's not what, I mean, that was more of the AAF idea than what the XFL wants, but it's going to happen.
Oh, yeah, the XFL wants to destroy the NFL, but it'll never happen. But yeah. I don't think it will happen. I mean, it could. And the NFL's, you know, it's got its detractors and more than enough people willing to jump ship. But I think at least, or the way to sustainability for the XFL, at a guess, is providing players this opportunity to make the jump into the NFL that they weren't before by getting experience, by getting reps, by getting practice. And frankly, what's probably a better than a college level, because at least all these guys are fully grown.
Yeah.
You know?
And they're offering decent money to quarterbacks. They're offering more than practice squad anyway, which is nice. So, I mean, they're drawing. That's why there was actually that's why he was there, and a couple of other guys were there. So they were offering more than practice squad money. So it's XFL could last for that reason alone, because there's nothing worse than just horrific quarterback play. So if you steal. You steal low-level NFL talent at the quarterback position, it's still not going to be NFL-caliber football, but at least it's worth watching. like, the corners you're facing aren't NFL-caliber either, so, I mean, these guys can actually have a chance to succeed at that level.
Is it worth watching? Is it, like, worth...
Oh, it was fun, man. It was a lot of fun to watch. It's definitely sloppy football compared to the NFL, but it was a lot of fun to watch. All the rule changes are really fun.
What are some of the rule changes? I honestly don't even know.
So kickoffs are one of the big ones. So
yeah, I've heard that. How are they different?
So you're penalized basically if you kick out of bounds, and the lines cannot move until the returner catches the ball. If you kick the ball out of bounds on the sidelines, I think you start at the opposing team starts at like the 45. Might even be your 45. Forget now. It only happened like once. They have a 1, 2, and 3 point conversion. All of them are a play. All of them are an actual play. No kick, no extra point kick. They do something to penalize punts too, so they really force you to try and go for it on fourth down.
Hmm.
There's a bunch of stuff that just it makes for an exciting game of football. It really does. Oh, and clock stops on every play in the last 2 minutes, so like you don't have to worry about getting out of bounds or any of that nonsense. Clock automatically stops.
Huh.
Yeah, man, it was a lot of fun. I mean, again, not great football yet. Hopefully, it gets better. But it was definitely entertaining football.
Do you think there's some value to that, it being less pretty football? Because if you're trying to learn what looks good, right? Like I said, I honestly mean it. Trying to compare college play to the NFL play, you've got players at a variety of different points in their career, and that is true in the NFL. That is true in the XFL. But at least they're fully grown. You've not got people learning their bodies, literally, a certain extent. And at least, presumably, they have all played the positions significantly. And that's, like, you've got a whole bunch of variables going on in college football that I don't think you would have in an XFL league. You've got other ones going in an XFL league that don't go on in college as well, but I think they're more sustainable, prediction-wise.
For
watching, like, you can't understand what good looks like if you don't understand what bad looks like. It's like underrating Philip Dorsett as a player.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, he's not Julio. He's not Cortland Sutton, but he's a remarkable player to get in the NFL and do what he's done. So being able to compare that to something like the XFL might provide a lot of value. When looking at production or analytics and also looking at tape, do you think it might provide that kind of, this is what it looks like when not like there's hardly anyone on the team that's perfect, so you get to see that low end.
Oh, for sure, you definitely get a good look at, especially on offensive line play. That was probably one of the biggest gaps there.
Oh.
You start to really see the difference in offensive line play when you start watching a league like the XFL. I don't think a single pocket passer was surviving there, really. I mean, you had to have some functional mobility or you were dead in the XFL.
Right.
it was a joke, like, how bad the offensive line play was compared to the defensive line play, for instance. So it was, that was fun. But yeah, there's definitely value there. As far as the fully grown thing, it just occurred to me that that may not stay that way because the XFL is actually talking about poaching college kids before they're eligible for the draft.
Like, that's another way it can succeed, because frankly, the draft is the only people that get ripped off with a draft honestly seem to be the players.
Yep.
I don't think it gives them a decent shot. Especially with what we're talking about with running back talent right now. Like, you get locked into a rookie contract in the first round, that's only bad for the running back, because by the time you get out of that contract, like we're seeing right now, the NFL's kind of already done with you. So
yeah,
that second contract bump really doesn't exist at running back right now.
No, and to be fair, I mean, the rookie I don't know necessarily if they'd get more money if there wasn't the rookie contract in place, though, because we are devaluing the position as a whole now.
That's fair.
And the top running back contracts are, a lot of them are rookies. I mean, first-round rookie deals are not chump change for running backs anymore.
They're not chump change, but, like, they're not what Todd Gurley and Melvin Gordon deserve. And I think if I'm a first-round running back and I can't get classified as a wide receiver looking at the NFL draft, if the XFL is ever in a position to say, look, we can't pay you as much, but we'll guarantee it for 2 years and you'll make twice what your rookie contract is, I start to get tempted because I can make a second contract after 2 years.
That's true.
You know what I mean?
Maybe
I could go to the NFL after 2 years. After they see me in the XFL, I'm still young enough where my position has value. I'm going to make more than my rookie deal, and it's guaranteed. Like, that would be a big thing. Like, I don't know the XFL would do that. But there's a way, like, someone with actually good at business could probably find a way of making the NFL more tempting for first-round running, not just running backs, but first-round talent running backs because of the way the position's going in the NFL right now.
Well, we're a ways away from now, the XFL. The pay grade for non-QBs is still shit. But, I mean, if the money starts coming in the XFL and they can start offering real player contracts, that would be interesting. That would be the AFL over again, basically. And you know, we know how that worked out. that'll be fun. Freaking, we'll have the new Al Davises of the world offering brand new cars along as part of their signing bonuses and shit. So yeah, it would XFL. I hope it succeeds. I had a lot of fun with it.
Thanks, Chris. I really appreciate you coming on. It's really great to get to talk to you for the first time in person. Could you let everyone know where they can find you and what you're up to and where your work's at?
Definitely. I'm at Christopher Bean on Twitter. I write for DFF Dynasty occasionally. I'm an amateur analytics nut here to tell you your favorite player is bad and this guy you never heard of is good.
That's excellent. thanks again, Chris. This was a lot of fun. And hopefully we can do it again in the future. Thanks to everyone for listening. Really appreciate you guys. And I will talk to you again next
time. Yeah. Chicken or crow, crossing the road, go. Clicking a poll, Twitter is gold, player unfold, so. Jake on the table and Nate on the play, so. Pete enumerates the plays, they're analytical. Picking my nose, don't really know if I like that. Picking their brains, got different lanes, but I like that. Picking these guys, all of these times, all of these nice stats. Picking apart, the film is an art, always a fight. Back and forth, there is no order, they disorder more and more. Because the players ain't no older, they some hoarders or some mortars. Dropping bombs without no borders, they got that I like Mordor. Peak grinding numbers like molars, I don't know anymore. I am at a crossroads. Chicken or crow, crossing the road, go. Clicking a poll, Twitter is gold, player unfold. So, Jake on the table and Nate on the play, so Pete enumerates the plays, they're analytical. Chicken or crow, crossing the road, go. Clicking a poll, Twitter is gold, player unfold, so Jake on the table and Nate on the play, so Pete enumerates the plays, they're analytical.